So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review man.
Yesterday, we were.
Gentlemen, we are going to be making history this evening.
Yesterday, we were dreamers with a boundless imagination.
What is Jimmy Jimmy doing? Toby King is coming to ringside. Toby King just suplexed Jimmy Jimmy. Toby King and Scott Hall just eliminated Jared.
Yesterday, we were youthful zealots embracing the promise of tomorrow.
Jeff Jarrett and Sting.
The crowd is going absolutely nuts. That's Raven. What is going on?
Brian Urlacher just took out the trash.
Yesterday, we were pioneers with bold ambitions.
I told you that Hulk Hogan tried to come to TNA, but I took TNA to Hogan.
Yesterday we were. Today. Today we have become daring and intrepid warriors.
He just moonsaulted off the top of the cage!
Never seen anything like this in my life!
Today we have become fearless leaders of a brave new world. Have become the very embodiment of our youthful hopes and dreams.
Just when you think you've seen it all, you watch a TNA pay-per-view and you see an incredible move like that.
Yesterday we were. Today we have become. Welcome to TNA's third anniversary celebration. And now, TNA Wrestling presents Slammiversary.
It's Review Away with John Pollock and Wei Ting, who just watched his first Slammiversary of the week. I've watched two.
Oh, wow.
We're going to find out which one was better today.
Yeah.
Well, at least I guess I can compare and contrast. You traveled back to 2005, as did I. How's the trip?
Weird. I feel like I want to vomit. I don't know what happens when you travel in the space-time continuum. It affects your molecules in a weird way.
Yes. This show, 2005 doesn't feel that long ago, but it really is. It's almost a decade.
Yeah. It's 9 years. I feel like that's a recurring theme of these shows, is realizing how...
Time was a long time ago.
Yeah. Realizing how much time has passed since we've watched these shows originally.
It's amazing when you look back at this show... happened a week after that Necro Butcher Samoa Joe match and the One Night Stand show. A lot was going on in the wrestling world.
Pretty important week and a half in pro wrestling.
That was also the same month as the draft that year, where John Cena was moved to Raw for the first time.
Wow.
So a big shift for John Cena, really becoming the focal point of the WWE at that point when he was moved to the A show.
Yeah, my life has never been the same.
It's never been the same for anybody, I think. How are you doing today?
Fine. Doing all right.
Now, what happened with Slammiversary? Last week, I asked you like Thursday or something, like very, very early. You know, you asked me if I had started Slammiversary. I was like, no, absolutely not. You're like, oh, I'm a third of the way through. And Way is notorious for, he likes to leave it right up until like recording time that he finishes these things. It's usually a race to the finish. Mm-hmm. So when I heard on Thursday that you were a third of the way through Slammiversary, I thought you were going to set a new Way record of how quickly you would be done this. Hmm. But here we are. You just finished the main event.
Yeah. I
took it for granted how deep into the show you were.
I just had a lighter week last week in terms of work at the office, so I got kind of bored and started to get ahead of, and watch this week's review. But then I got really bored watching it.
So and that was it. You had to turn it off.
So I stopped. And it's not even like it was a bad show. It was actually a very good show, this show. I wanted to do something else, and I ended up taking a couple days off from watching it until today.
Oh, I thought you meant just from work as well. You just needed a break from everything.
There's a weekend, too. Yeah.
Did you have a good weekend?
Yeah. It was nice.
In lieu of Slammiversary viewing?
Yes. Yeah, it was nice. My friends and I had a barbecue. It was...
I went to a barbecue on the weekend, too.
Oh, yeah?
It wasn't the same one.
No, which one?
I wasn't invited to yours.
Okay. Well, how was Father's Day for you?
It was good. It was Father's Day.
Okay.
Talked to my dad. How did Mr. Ting celebrate
Father's Day? My dad actually worked on Father's Day, so we're going to delay the celebration.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, it's Father's Day. It's not Father's Week.
I know.
You can't just pick and choose here.
Yeah, well...
How was the barbecue? This was the friends?
Good, yeah.
You had a very weekend that, despite all the stuff going on, you skipped UFC, you skipped Slammiversary, both Slammiversaries. Mm-hmm. So you had a very non-fighting weekend.
Yeah, I think it's probably...
It's good. It's a cleansing.
Sort of. I mean, on the one hand, I feel like it's my duty to watch all this stuff.
No.
But maybe not for me. For you...
Slammiversary 2005, yeah. That is your duty for the week.
Yeah, yeah.
You did have to watch that, and you did watch it.
Yeah, I've said this to you before. These UFCs, they happen so often now. I didn't even really have any interest in watching this one, so I didn't.
Yeah, I don't think you're alone in that. I think a lot of people are. I think the pay-per-views especially are much more of a harder sell now. Like, if you have that big, big main event, people are going to go out of their way to see it. But I think it's tougher now to get people to drop $50 for cards that are very comparable on paper to what you're seeing free every week. I mean, mm-hmm. Demetrius Johnson, we've just watched him fight on Fox for free for multiple cards. And you look at some of these Fox lineups. I mean, Robbie Lawler and Matt Brown are going to fight for free on Fox in July. And that, to me, is a fight I have way more intrigue than I had of any of the fights going into Vancouver, where I'm to pay $50 for.
Yeah. I mean, you know, with the free shows, I can get friends over and we don't really have to pay anything. We can PVR and I get my fill of MMA for the month. I could take the next week off. Fine. No problem.
Yeah. Well, pay-per-view.
Yeah.
It's a tough business. Are you planning to watch Ring of Honor this weekend? No.
Maybe not, no.
Probably not.
No.
You weren't even sure this ROH pay-per-view.
I didn't even know.
You asked me last week, when is that ROH pay-per-view? Yeah. And that's when I realized very few people are buying this show.
What are the matches?
That's another question that tells me that not a lot of people are buying this show. Hmm. The headliner is Adam Cole and Michael Elgin for the ROH title. You've got Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian against Red Dragon. Without Tom Lawler. So they don't have their usual training partner.
That's a good match, though.
Still. It's good, a good match. I just don't think a lot of people know this pay-per-view is happening.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's Wednesday right now. Mm-hmm. And I don't sense any kind of, really, any attention towards this show. I thought that, you know, I think many people, it'd be ridiculous to compare this to when ECW did Barely Legal. Like, that was a real big deal for the company at the time, and everything was built towards that show. I didn't expect that level, but this just, it feels like there's a house show on the weekend almost, and you have the opportunity to watch it. And to me, it's like, Kazarian and Daniels, that's cool that they're teaming up in Ring of Honor, but that's, I don't know, you need that really big event feel for a pay-per-view to succeed. And this one, I just don't sense it right now.
You need that dream match, you know, that everybody's been wanting to see for a long time.
Sure.
And I didn't even know the card. But
in a perfect world, if they had that one of the combination New Japan cards, I think that would have more interest among your hardcore fan base. I don't think the hardcore fan base is really looking at this show as a, you know, with any sort of giant anticipation.
So what really, though, is the difference between this ROH show and the, I mean, the iPay-per-views that they've been doing, aside from the fact that you can watch it on TV?
Well, theoretically, it can reach more people. And therefore, I mean, their targeting, their hope is that they can do 7,000 buys on pay-per-view, which would dwarf their highest number they've ever done on iPay-per-view. So you have, I think, the opportunity. A lot of fans, I think, they're much more comfortable with that usual time slot on traditional pay-per-view.
You mean Sunday?
On a Sunday night.
Yeah.
Rather than going the digital route and watching it on your computer or hooking your computer up. I just think it's more accessible. More people are comfortable watching shows in that traditional fashion. And therefore, I think this would have been an opportunity for a lot of people that have heard about Ring of Honor, have fallen out of watching the product, to jump back on. And I don't see that hook that is that reason to jump back on, for instance. Mm-hmm. So we'll find out. Slammiversary from 2005. Had you seen this show before?
I don't think so. I'm not 100% because I think I was working.
I think you had just started.
Yeah, I think I had just started at the Fight Network, but I don't know if I was working at the Law yet. So I don't know. I vaguely remember. But maybe I was. I don't know.
You don't remember a man going through a vasectomy during a match?
No.
One of the greatest calls of in Don West history.
With a staple gun.
With a staple gun.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of characters at this time. What was your were you watching TNA at this point in time? This was before they started on Spike. They started on Spike in October. And at this time, it was kind of hard to follow TNA because they had the weekly Wednesday night pay-per-views. Then they got the deal with Fox Sportsnet, and I think that had just wrapped up. And on this show, they were announcing that Impact was debuting on their website starting that Friday. So this was the in-between period post-Fox Sportsnet and pre-Spike TV, where I don't think anybody anticipated Spike TV was going to put TNA on after they had just pretty much told WWE, we are not going to be re-signing you, and why would you go to the number two organization when you had the opportunity to keep number one?
Mm-hmm. No, the price, I guess.
Oh, well, yeah, it's much lower, but Spike clearly saw the value of having professional wrestling in some juncture, because, of course, they had UFC at that point, yeah. And having it as kind of one could lead into the other. So this was prior to that announcement, so it was a bit hard to be following the product at this point, where you either had to watch on the internet, and it was a very small audience that was your core base at this point in 2005.
Mm-hmm. So how did you guys follow it, aside from pay-per-view?
I imagine I was just watching on the website at the time. I don't think I was regularly watching Impact week after week, because it was very difficult to find. We didn't get Fox Sportsnet in Canada, so it wasn't easy to get those shows, nor were there plenty of websites at that time where you could just look up a show and watch it. This was 2004, 2005. It was the dark ages. This was pre-YouTube.
Oh, wow.
Man, maybe I could find the commentary on Napster or Kazaa and listen to Mike Tenay and Don West, maybe.
Uh-huh.
This is a different world back then.
I know.
Long time ago, way. Long, long time ago. So this show, brought to you by my VHS, mm-hmm. which you later discovered after I transferred this onto my hard drive. We could have just bought this for like $2. TNA offers all of their pay-per-views, which I didn't find. I didn't even realize this. I knew they had this at one point, and I thought they just got rid of it. They never advertise this. You can watch any TNA pay-per-view for what, $2 or $3?
$2.
$2.
Yeah.
It's a steal.
It is. It absolutely
this was
is.
Definitely worth $2.
Oh, for sure. But I just, you're right. Maybe that's something they should promote a bit more. But
for our reviews, I mean, TNA pay-per-views are very accessible. However, I worry about choosing this Slammiversary event and whether people, I hope they want to hear this review, because we got like next to no feedback for this show, meaning nobody watched this and no one really had any desire to hear us talk about Slammiversary. So I never know if we should pick reviews that people are listening and maybe they don't know what the event was and the outcome, and do they want to hear more popular shows? But then I get the same criticism. Ah, you guys are doing too much WWE stuff. More obscure. Well, this is apparently obscure. Slammiversary.
I feel like with TNA, I imagine the damage done to the brand in recent years probably doesn't help its archive, at least interest in its archive either. I just feel like, you know, when you think of Royal Rumble, or you think of, you know, even something like King of the Ring, you can think of a couple that, you know, really stand out to you. But when you think of Slammiversary, even though I think there's some of them, like this show, for instance, that were good shows, you just probably tend to think of all the, I don't know.
You don't associate any specific moments. Like, you tell me Royal Rumble. You can probably rattle off the top of your head dozens of different moments at a Royal Rumble. Or what was the big match of this year, or the big winner of this Royal Rumble? TNA, I've always said, very much of a blurred history. When I ask you, what are some of the top TNA moments? I mean, you think of the three-way.
Raven's debut.
Raven's debut.
Number three.
Apparently, yeah, they actually did do a top five. But really, like, Angle and Joe's headbutt. Like, TNA has been around for 12 years now. And if you were to tell me these iconic moments that they have produced, probably on one hand, those easily recognizable moments that the average I can't tell you what the main event
Claire Lynch.
Hard Justice 2005 was.
I would say Claire Lynch is probably up
okay.
There.
Well, that's the. I don't know if those are the classic moments for positivity.
I would love to see like a countdown of like the worst TNA moments. Like that TNA would admit to themselves, because I think they could have a lot.
But
of
WWE does that now, and they count down. You know, they bring up tons of horrible moments in their history.
Yeah, there's like, you know, maybe you do it along with all the good moments too, because there were definitely a lot of good moments if you can.
Yeah, I just don't think they've been. They don't hit you over the head with them. You don't remember them. If something great happens, I honestly believe that Kevin Von Erich applying the claw on Zema Ion on Sunday was a top 10 TNA moment.
Wow.
Maybe top 5 for me personally.
Really?
I thought it was so awesome.
Okay.
Have you watched it yet?
I haven't seen it. No.
I bugged you on Monday to go back and watch it.
I know.
You're very bad about it. All I'm saying is go back and watch 2 minutes.
Okay, I will.
It's a good show. You see, you're getting choked up now just thinking of this Texas crowd cheering for Kevin Von Erich.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to think our review was a real primer for Slammiversary this year. Going back to world class and setting the table for the reaction that Kevin Von Erich would get in Texas.
That's clearly the only reason they brought him in.
Yeah, it must be. All right, well, this show, apparently I didn't record the countdown show. It started off with Larry Zbysko. At this point, they were changing around the booking in TNA. Dusty Rhodes had been the booker. And then they came to Dusty and said, well, Dusty, we're going to move over to a committee format led by Scott D'Amore, and we'd like you to be part of that committee. And Dusty's got a bit of an ego. Mm. Dusty was like, listen, baby, it's either Dusty's way or no way, baby. And he walked out. And Dusty was done with the company, and he also had an authority, even back then, TNA, they loved their authority figures. They had to have somebody. So he was replaced on camera by Larry Zbysko. But this was the transfer over to Scott D'Amore, kind of heading up the committee. Mike Tenay was on there. I believe Jeremy Borash was, Bill Banks. And that was the move over to what many believed was kind of the best period of TNA from around right now, mid-05 to like the summer of 2006 when Scott D'Amore was replaced. Vince Russo was brought back at that time, and it was essentially Russo overseeing the creative direction. So that's kind of where we were in TNA's history at this point. The only thing that really came out of the pre-show was that Jeff Jarrett came out. He was scheduled for the King of the Mountain match that night to challenge for the NWA title, as they still were affiliated with the NWA, and punched a fan and was arrested and taken off of the show.
What was the story behind this?
I don't know what it was. I don't know why they wanted to take out Jarrett and put in Raven. I'm sure there was some kind of story that was the reason for that. Maybe they just didn't want to put the title on Jarrett, or I don't know what it was. I'm merely guessing.
Odd. It's odd to change the name. Was he injured?
Could have been. I don't know.
Huh.
So Raven was allowed into the building and added to the King of the Mountain match to fill the vacant spot. And then we cut to the final minutes with...
Wait, was Raven an active with the company at the time?
Yes.
So then why didn't he have a match?
He was in some kind of angle at that point, I think with Zbysko, where they were feuding, and he was not put into the match. So he was kind of the anti-authority figure.
Right, but he didn't even have a spot on the show? Somebody that important?
I guess not.
Okay.
Maybe this was always the plan, to put Raven in at the end.
Hmm. All right.
We had Don West, Jeremy Borash, and Jeremy Borash's 2005 hair to sell the pay-per-view to us. This was a...
Oh, yeah.
quite a lot of product in Borash's hair.
Yes,
that
yes.
was just very much Before Four-esque. Remember them?
Yeah, the Canadian pop boy band.
Yeah,
pop group.
Before Four.
Yeah. Because Before Four is three, and there are three members.
So clever.
I know.
That band.
Geniuses.
Oh, God.
So this is Jeremy Borash's boy band look.
This was his boy band look. Quite the tan on the man as well.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine him in the Nashville, like, the Euro scene. I'm sure Jeremy Borash was
the
just
Nashville Euro scene.
I imagine it exists. Yeah, with this look,
Nashville
it had to have
Raves
existed.
Crowd?
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
So they then show a promo for Slammiversary, really built around the concept of these are the new stars of professional wrestling. And they really tried to hit that, including the opening video, which was had to have been a David Sahadi special. Mm-hmm. Very, very metaphorical, comparing TNA to a baby being born. And everything was about new. We are the different product of pro wrestling. We are something fresh. These are the new stars of tomorrow, and you get to see them today. And this was contrasted with all these highlights of their first show and other highlights of the first 3 years, as this was their three-year anniversary show, and including child photos of some of the talent and evolving into what they are today, which they call fearless leaders of a brave new world.
I thought they were like specifically trying to show how lame some of these moments in the 3 years were by showing off like Toby Keith.
These were big moments for them.
Showing the Hogan stuff and then showing people like Nash coming out. And then using that to specifically contrast to, you know, showing the great highlights of the X Division performers and, you know, basically making it look like this company is fresh and new now because it's being built around the X Division stars as opposed to the older kind of, rundown veterans that TNA seems to be built around.
And this was also kind of where the WWE, if you're to look back of the past 15 years, it was, you know, 2003, 2004, 2005. I mean, those were relatively down years for the company where there was a lot of staleness at that time, even as they were trying to create new stars with like John Cena. But it was certainly there was a hunger for an alternative promotion. And I think that was where TNA was able to grab a lot of people because they very much looked at WWE and tried to base themselves around what WWE wasn't doing. And a huge part of that was the X Division that the WWE was never going to promote. And there was an excess amount of talent outside of the WWE that could work that style to a very high degree.
I think something we looked at last week in our review of that IWA show is just, you know, there's such a great feeling of such a burgeoning of talent from the indie scene. And I think TNA provided a national platform to kind of get a lot of those stars exposure.
Yeah, and they had a great, not even a working agreement, but they were very much fine with their talent working outside dates, including with Ring of Honor. I mean, they flat out said Samoa Joe is here because he's been tearing up Ring of Honor. He's been incredible.
It was a direct lifting of his Ring of Honor character and Ring of Honor persona.
They didn't tinker with it, didn't change his name. It wasn't, well, he's not our guy. It was like, he was brought in because you should see him in Ring of Honor.
Yes, here is the Ring of Honor champion who had not lost his title. They mentioned he is currently the ROH Pure Champion.
Yes.
They mentioned that specifically.
He's still the Pure Champion.
Yeah.
And guys were able to go and still work for ROH, including on DVD releases. And eventually all of that would change. Mm-hmm. And it was a great time for a while for these guys who they got onto Spike TV. They could still go out. The indie scene was very healthy at that point, 2004, 2005. And it was like both were benefiting each other. And then TNA, I think, eventually got to a point where, well, we're giving these guys national exposure. We don't want them getting injured on certain outside shows. And talent would eventually have to go through the office, whereas before they could just take their own dates and go work wherever they wanted. And then suddenly all those restrictions came. And that was just a reality of TNA growing and thus talent being more handcuffed when it came to their outside dates. We had Mike Tenay and Don West calling the show. I really enjoyed Don West. I miss this guy a lot.
You know, compared to some of the commentary we see today, definitely I agree with you. At the time, though, I didn't really appreciate just kind of how he only had one level, okay, and that was 11. He didn't know, like, to me, it felt almost disingenuous how excited he was, because he seemed like he was excited about everything.
Yeah, to me, he always came across, though, like a super fan, and he, to me, was always, it felt sincere, like, this is just a fan that's been given a microphone, and, yeah, he was a lot to take, but I think if you had a certain appreciation for him, he would be great. Like, I'll take overexcited rather than just goddamn telling jokes for 3 hours.
Yes, I agree completely.
Yeah. Did you find any major differences specifically with Mike Tenay? He seems so invigorated here on this show, so in love with this product, and today it feels a very big removal from that.
I totally sense, like, a lot more kind of optimism, and yeah, you're right, genuine enthusiasm maybe for a lot of what he's actually calling on the show. I think, you know, he probably still has that, but you have to figure somebody of today's background would think many of the things that he's been being forced to call in today's TNA to be completely ridiculous and not something that he is genuinely excited to.
Like, this guy went from, you know, breaking down Alex Shelley and his British influences to the menagerie.
Yeah.
That's how, to the guys on stilts and Crazy Steve. Mm. That's been the contrast in a nutshell. They show highlights from the pre-show of Jarrett attacking the fan and Raven added to the main event. And it kicks off with a X Division six-way. Zach Gowen, Delirious, ROH Booker, Delirious, Jarrell Clark, who was a product kind of the Florida indie scene and was most well-known for doing a 630 splash off the top rope, which didn't come out in this match. Amazing Red, who is returning to TNA. He was one of the standouts of the X Division in 2002-2003. Elix Skipper and Shark Boy. And they mention Shark Boy's ongoing lawsuit with the movie Shark Boy and Lava Girl that Shark Boy really doesn't ever want to talk about because there was some insane settlement that apparently he made out very well in.
Wow.
Because he sued them when the movie came out, he had been using the Shark Boy. That was his intellectual property.
All those royalties from the Shark Boy and the Lava Girl.
Yeah. It looks like a
blockbuster.
Shark Boy smelt blood and attacked.
Yes. It's so weird. Do you think Steve Austin has anything to say about his...
The $6 million man?
No.
The other Steve Austin?
Stone Cold Steve Austin.
Oh, sorry. I thought you meant because Steve Austin was was a famous television character, and you're talking about Shark Boy stealing Steve Austin's
gimmick.
Yeah,
but I guess the other Steve Austin.
Everyone steals from everyone is the point we're both trying to make, I think.
That is true.
That's how wrestling works. Jarrell Clark hit this handspring off the ropes into a leaping standing moonsault, but missed Red. Gowen, who wrestles with the one leg, comes off the turnbuckle, as Mike Tenay says, obviously a single leg drop from Zach Gowen.
Single leg drop.
Obviously. Yeah, obviously. Thanks, Mike Tenay. Red comes off the top with a corkscrew with the infrared to the floor onto three members of the match. They do the Tower of Doom spot with Delirious on top. Then there's a moonsault to Clark by Gowen, and then the save is made by Shark Boy because it's one fall to a finish. They go through a bunch of near falls and breakups. Delirious goes for the Cobra Clutch into a backbreaker, but then Shark Boy comes in and hits the Dead Sea Drop to Delirious and pins him at 627 as Mike Tenay yells, "That's how you kick off a Sunday night pay-per-view."
Mm-hmm.
So some excitement from Mike Tenay here. Very quick match, and kind of this was TNA's calling card of doing, you know, the hot cruiserweight match to start off a show.
Yeah, great opener, and exactly. This, you know, again, was a great reflection of the state of indie wrestling at the time, I thought. Just a bunch of great, fast, lighter-weight talent. And TNA provided that platform for them to showcase what they do on TV. I wouldn't want every match to be like this. You know, this X Division style certainly is what made TNA popular. But I think eventually it went on to become a sort of abused and overused, especially, you know, at a lot of indie shows that we probably attended.
And TNA was guilty of this too, where they went through a period. They just wanted everybody to get onto every pay-per-view. So you just have six mans thrown together without any build, which is what this was, which is kind of what we had on Sunday with the ladder match as well, where a bunch of guys just thrown in there. But not the worst way to start off a show.
No, I thought
it's just warming up the crowd.
No, I thought here it provided it was a perfect placement for it. Gets the crowd really hot, and they stayed hot for the entire show. Big finish, one move stacked on top of the other. It was a lot of fun.
Amazing how when you go back to this and you see, I guess, a more invigorated audience. The Impact Zone argument doesn't exist here on a show like this. Who they got Impact? They did all the tapings here. They did all the pay-per-views here. This crowd, there were no problems with this crowd. Good show. You got a good crowd reaction. Amazing how that stuff kind of works. Abyss is in the back with his chain and punches a glass mirror for whatever reason, which was kind of funny because TNA kind of did have 7 years of bad luck after this.
Yeah.
Shane Douglas, who was the backstage interviewer, most famous for his facial reactions.
That face.
That's so over the top.
Yeah.
He's with Shocker, who is wearing these jean overalls. He was kind of a Dusty Rhodes project. He loved this McDonald's commercial that Shocker was in and wanted to make Shocker the big Mexican crossover star in TNA, and he didn't quite get there. Had a lot of issues and didn't really get over in TNA. He came to TNA, he says.
Well, what sort of issues?
Just problems with not showing up for shows. It was just didn't really work, and they eventually he's had lots of out of the ring problems down in Mexico since then. And unfortunately, a guy with a lot of charisma, but just has had a lot of personal issues that has led to his ability to become a bigger star, I think, in Mexico and definitely in the U.S. He cuts a promo talking about wanting top competition here. He says he's the best Mexican luchador in the world. And then Alex Shelley walks in and brags about the fact he can do lucha libre, European style, catch-as-catch-can, Japanese strong style, American style, and on a good day, even mixed martial arts. And he has a counter for everything, and Shocker then cuts a Spanish promo on him.
Hard to believe Shelley was only 22 here.
I know, and looked extremely young. He still looks young, even 9 years later.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But here, I mean, at such a young age and already kind of getting this level of television time, pretty impressive.
Alex Shelley and Shocker was our next match where basically Alex Shelley's gimmick is that he studies every variety of professional wrestling, focusing heavily on British style. And I like this. This was a completely different match from the opener. It was a very technical match. I don't know how much the crowd was into it, but this seemed to be the kind of match that Mike Tenay just sunk his teeth into and let Don West just kind of a bit of a washroom break. You know what I mean? It's like, let Mike Tenay do the heavy lifting in this match, and Don can just do a few wows and get loud. Tenay goes over the background of Shocker in CMLL and now signed with AAA. This is where they announced Impact will be airing every Friday on their website, beginning that Friday. That was an idea that was not going to last long, but thankfully they had a big TV deal at the end of the road. Shelley is using mat wrestling to get the best of Shocker early on, and Shocker is coming back with his own wrestling to frustrate Shelley. Shelley at one point kisses Shocker's foot as he backs off, but then it sets up a cheap shot on Shocker. He hits a tilt-a-whirl leg scissors, and then Shelley misses a pescado to the floor and gets drop-kicked off the apron by Shocker. Then there's a side Russian leg sweep into a submission by Shelley. Shocker hits a dropkick in midair to Shelley, who comes off the top, and then a tope suicida to the floor. A released German fisherman suplex by Shelley gets a two count, and then Shocker goes for the Mahistral cradle, which is countered by Shelley with the European version of the maneuver that Tenay points out. And then Shocker.
Well, and what is the exact difference?
You would have to look at the setup of it. It's basically just a different variation of kind of the isolating the arm to control for the cradle portion of it.
That's really cool.
This is a technical inside baseball shit that they were putting this match.
I
enjoyed this.
Need a five rounds breakdown of the differences.
Shocker uses a roll-up with a leg over the neck of Shelley and then rolls up and basically traps his arms for the win at 10 minutes and 45 seconds. So essentially here, Alex Shelley was bragging he's the more technical wrestler, and then he loses to a classic wrestling hold by Shocker here. Mm-hmm. I really like this. This is different than any other match on the show.
Yeah, I think it was great. And you know, how often these days on, I mean, either TNA or WWE, do you get basically an angle promoting a style versus another style? Like, come on. Wow, what a concept. A wrestling style feud, and a feud not involving, I don't know, kidnappings or
stealing someone's woman.
Yeah, whatever. So this was great. I loved it. I was surprised at how well these two gelled together, especially working sort of a more British influence style with a Shocker in there. I thought Tanay did excellent explaining Shocker's career and his history to an audience who probably wasn't that familiar with him. Very good match. Nice, technical, and quick.
Throughout the show, they were going to go through the top five TNA moments as voted by the fans. And number five was AJ Styles defeating Jeff Jarrett for the NWA title in June of 2003.
Sure, okay.
Moment that I'm sure comes to mind for most people when you list the top moments.
They had only had 3 years of history up to this point, so I don't even know if it was worthwhile to do one of these. But
well, they didn't do a top 10. They did a top 5.
Top 5, yeah.
Shane Douglas is in the back with three live crew consisting of Conan, BG James, and Ron Killings. And they question James on his loyalty ever since Billy Gunn, who was going under the name The Outlaw, had come into TNA, and whether BG was going to turn on Killings and Conan to join The Outlaw.
I remember being so confused about these guys' names. Billy Gunn would come in with a bunch of names. He was The Outlaw, Cute Kip James. He wore a shirt here that said
no introduction necessary.
Yeah, N-I-N, no introduction necessary. I didn't know what his name was. And then you had BG James, who I always confused him with Billy Gunn because I thought stood for Billy Gunn. But no, it stands for Brian Gerard, which is his real name. But
yeah, that is confusing.
Just like names that have nothing to do with, what their original personas were. And of course, I feel like these two are a prime example of how even without something as seemingly meaningless as, the brand, the New Age Outlaws, or the brand of Billy Gunn and Road Dogg, how different and kind of how watered down they felt in TNA.
Their brand was not soaring at this point.
No, it was not.
This was a bad year for the brand. New Age Outlaws brand.
They need the hashtag. It would be a bit better.
Hashtag brand assistance. They showed a video. Basically, BG told Killings and Conan he was hurt, that his heart was being questioned, and he was going to prove that he is aligned with Conan and Killings. So there was a video on the whole program here between Three Live Crew and The Outlaw, and kind of doing the long tease that the fans wanted to see a New Age Outlaws reunion, but they were going to milk the separation for as long as possible. Very much you could see the fingerprints of Dutch Mantel when he booked in Puerto Rico, of teasing something but making you wait and wait and wait for it before you finally pull the trigger. So we had The Outlaw against Ron Killings.
The Outlaw comes into a ripoff of his old Mr. Ass theme.
Which was always, to me, I hated when TNA did that stuff. Like, you have an opportunity here, like
Hogan, or with what is it? Didn't they do like a ripoff NWO theme?
They did with Hogan. I guess I was less critical of that one, but I always found it was like when you bring in a name, I like to present him as something different than the WWE version we got, especially when they had been cut by the WWE, and you're already coming in with kind of the baggage of, well, the big company didn't want you, so present him in somewhat a different fashion. Like, had a shitty name coming in here. You're just going to use his rip-off WWE theme. It's like, we're just admitting that all of our fans watch WWE, and we're just going to try and carbon copy his character.
But they do. I think if you're the number two company in TNA's case, you have to acknowledge their WWE history. The whole angle is them reuniting as their WWE tag team.
I think you could still do the reunion, but I mean, ECW would take a guy and be like, look how they fucked with this guy in the WWF. He was a clown over there, and repackaged him in a way that was unique, that was fresh. Like, imagine if WCW had just thought, well, everyone knows Diesel and Razor Ramon, so we just have to present them as light versions of that when they came in.
They pretty much did, though. Scott Hall was just,
they were completely different characters in WCW.
I wouldn't say so.
As Razor Ramon and Diesel?
He was pretty much the same guy.
They came in as under their real names. They were not.
But he played the same character. He talked the same way.
He had the toothpick.
Cut the same
promo. I think they did a great job of completely repackaging Kevin Nash and Scott Hall as opposed to Diesel and Razor Ramon at the time. They didn't feel like cartoon characters any longer.
Right, but I wouldn't say they're a complete repackaging, you know? They had the rights, I think they would have totally kept it.
I don't know. I don't think it would have worked in that capacity coming in at that point like that. Anyway, Killings at this point is a former two-time NWA champion. The match begins. There was a tilt-a-whirl head scissors by Killings and then a missile dropkick off the top to the Outlaw. Then the Outlaw hits a low blow right in front of the referee. This did not cause him to even bat an eye. Killings then crotches himself on the top rope, going for a drop kick as Outlaw goes to the floor off the apron. A fan holds up a chair, and the Outlaw gets sent into it. This is a very dull match. Outlaw then comes off the turnbuckle into a boot and does just this goofy overselling that you couldn't take seriously at all. He hits a Famouser, and then Outlaw goes for the Cobra Clutch, but gets countered with a roll-up, and Killings pins him at 737. And then after the match, Outlaw attacks him, hits the Cobra Clutch Slam, and then gives the finger to the crowd. He gets a chair. BG runs in and takes the chair. The crowd is chanting New Age Outlaws, and the Outlaw turns his back to allow BG to hit him, but he hesitates and just stands there. And then Conan runs in, shoves the Outlaw away, and takes the chair. And BG explained that he was just about to hit him when Conan ran in.
I wasn't a big fan of this whole tease with the BG James and the whatever his name is, the Outlaw.
The Outlaw.
I think, you know, any wrestling fan would just assume that they were going to get back together anyway. Not only that, I think I just kind of had my fill of these characters in 2004. Yeah, I was impressed with Truth, I thought, you know. Like, comparing him, his offense at this point to, you know, sort of the matches he wrestles in the WWE, I thought he looked a lot better and more varied here with his high-flying offense.
The number four moment was Raven debuting for the company in January of 2003, which was a big moment at the time for TNA. Raven had just been cut, and he... usually when you get fired in WWE, you get a 90-day – there's a 90-day cycle, and you still get paid during those 90 days, and then you're free to go. Raven gave up that 90-day cycle so he could debut in TNA. So it was a real big surprise when this guy showed up like a week after he'd been let go, and it built up. They built up Raven challenging for the title over the next 2.5 months, and it was probably the biggest match TNA put together in their first – year was Jeff Jarrett and Raven at the end of April in 2003 for the title, where Raven came in and he felt fresh and he was a big pickup for TNA at the time. It was like a real name coming to TNA early on. Shane Douglas is with Team Canada. Bobby Roode, Eric Young, Petey Williams, A1, which always got joked as the steak sauce, and Scott D'Amore. And Roode cuts a promo on Lance Hoyt, telling him to prepare to be Canadianized. Then Williams cuts a promo on the Naturals, and Douglas notes how the Naturals have a new legendary advisor, a mystery advisor working with them, and it ends with Scott D'Amore cutting a promo.
When you think of great generals, you think of Stalin, you think of Hitler, you think of Mussolini, and when it comes to professional wrestling, you think of D'Amore! Naturals, the clock is ticking. Let your little advisor coddle you backstage. Let him hold you close to their bosom. But when it's all said and done, and you walk through that apron, there's no way you or your advisors can match wits or talent with Team Canada. Let's go get the belts, and let's put them where they belong. Let's go, boys! Do it!
Where he compares himself to Stalin, Mussolini, and Hitler. Scott D'Amore is on that level of an evil dictator. Not many heels that have the balls to compare themselves to Hitler or Mussolini, but Scott D'Amore making you aware of the wrestling equivalent to Hitler.
Wow.
Was here in TNA. And then we got a video package on the feud involving the Naturals and Eric Young and Petey Williams. So the Naturals were defending the NWA tag titles. There was a slap exchange here with Young doing this nasty plunge to his back. Young did a leapfrog and then sold his right knee upon landing, but then was just playing possum as he sends the Naturals consisted of Chase Stevens and Andy Douglas. Bit of a footnote in TNA tag history. And then A1 attacks Chase Stevens from the floor. Don West puts Scott D'Amore right up there with the Dictators as the most hated men ever. And Don West, his goal was just to emphasize what a piece of garbage Scott D'Amore is. Calling him a fat blob. Not that Don West was the model of fitness here, but he was just disgusted at this piece of fat, Scott D'Amore. They got the heat on Stevens in their corner. There was a top rope leg drop by Eric Young for a two count. And then the heels worked behind the referee's back with A1 and D'Amore attacking Stevens. Don West doesn't know if Stevens will ever be the same after this attack on the floor. Ever. They continue to beat down on him. Don West is worried that Stevens might be killed as he was sent into the steel steps. And then Douglas goes after A1 on the floor. He's not in the corner for the tag and then rolls away from Petey. And eventually the hot tag is made to get Andy Douglas in. They go back and forth here. Douglas knocks Petey off of the shoulders of Stevens for a near fall. They hit the Natural Disaster, but Petey makes the save. And then Douglas counters the Canadian Destroyer. He hits him with the flag running into the ropes. And then out of nowhere, Jimmy Hart appears and passes the megaphone over to Chase Stevens, who hits Petey with it behind the referee's back to stop the Canadian Destroyer. And Andy Douglas pins Petey Williams. 15 minutes, 16 seconds, so the Naturals keep the tag titles, and they celebrate with their new advisor, Jimmy Hart.
I thought this was another very good match. You know, all these guys involved in this match are very talented. Work rate, just overall, I thought was very high on this whole show. My only question is, what sort of spirituality is Jimmy Hart teaching these Naturals?
Maybe the lessons he would incorporate during Zumba class years later on Legends House. He was teaching the Naturals.
I just thought the way they framed it, the Naturals have a new spiritual advisor, and then to have the reveal be Jimmy Hart, who I'm sure maybe on Sundays he's probably maybe he's sort of a spiritual guy, but I wouldn't have necessarily framed him as the spiritual advisor.
Maybe Jimmy Hart just thought he's done so much in pro wrestling, but having been associated with Hulk Hogan for so long, he's never worked with anyone Natural before.
Oh, wow.
That's fact. The Hulk Hogan used steroids. He has admitted that under oath.
Yes.
That is not a slander.
He's worked with a lot of different people.
Yeah, he has.
Natural and unnatural.
Probably more unnatural, but that's pro wrestling for you, folks.
It was fun to see Rude and Eric Young here. You know, the two guys.
I loved Eric Young at this point. I thought this guy was like breakout star. He was just I really enjoyed him. He was my favorite guy in Team Canada this time.
He was. He's also much bigger at this time than he is now. I mean, he's still big, like muscular now, but back then I'd say he was less of a natural than probably today.
This was a... That Team Canada group, when you look at it, I mean, Bobby Roode, Petey Williams, Eric Young, A1 really didn't turn out to be much. I always hated that name. I thought it was such a goofy name.
It's a dumb name.
So I got hungry whenever they would mention it. Mm-hmm. I thought of a steak every time. I thought HP was going to come in to feud with them.
It should have been something more Canadian, you know, like Heinz or... What's a Canadian sauce?
Molson. Could he go as Molson? That probably would be a copyright infringement.
I'm thinking of a condiment here.
Oh, okay.
Some syrup. Jemima. That's American, though.
That'd be as... I don't know. Jesus Christ. Okay. Shane Douglas is with Sean Waltman. And he asks Sean how he politicked his way into this King of the Mountain match. So Sean Waltman explains how he's a hell of a backstage politician. Deserves to be in this match. He ran with the click, but he will stand alone tonight to win the title. Talk about a promo that did not get me at all interested in seeing you go do a worked pro wrestling match. I politicked my way because I'm a great politician in the back, and I got myself booked into this match.
This felt to me like a babyface promo, though. At least
I didn't know what he was here.
Because, and certainly in the way he wrestled. Oh, no, he was a heel. Never mind.
Oh, okay. Sean Waltman actually got inserted into a match with Raven the month prior because Jeff Hardy no-showed the pay-per-view. He didn't make his flight, and Jeff Hardy got suspended as a result, and that's why Jeff Hardy wasn't on this show.
Gotcha.
Now, this was not the... Jeff Hardy did not have a glowing reputation amongst the... When TNA's suspending you and you're a big star, that's telling you something.
Multiple times. You forgot the Slammiversary moment number three.
Yes, number three was just an entire pay-per-view. The lockdown pay-per-view, which got a lot of criticism when it was announced. An all-steel cage match pay-per-view, which ended up being a really good show. In particular, the main event with AJ Styles and Abyss.
And it's one of the few pay-per-views they decided to keep, right?
Somewhat. Did they do all cage matches for lockdown this year?
I don't remember.
I can't remember either, and that was only like 2 months ago.
Okay.
But it got over. It became like, to me, usually lockdown became the big show of the year.
Well, I will say it's one of the only TNA pay-per-views that kind of has like a distinguishing characteristic about it, you know?
I remember seeing, who was it? One of the people we used to work with, I remember thinking this was a direct response to the UFC in popularity, doing an all-cage match show.
Oh, please.
I was like, well, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, so.
Yeah. It was a hexagonal cage, though.
Someone just sent me this. Okay. It really has no bearing on this show, so.
They should do, like, maybe one pay-per-view. They should just throw in an MMA octagon in there and have the wrestling matches in the octagon. That would be capitalizing on the popularity.
Yeah. Of MMA. Up next, the much-anticipated, to some, debut of Samoa Joe in TNA, taking on Sanjay Dutt. And Mike Tenay deserves as much praise for this debut as Sanjay Dutt did for getting Joe over, as Joe did for just... This was... I don't want to say squash match, but that's really what this was. Oh, it was like the best squash match debut imaginable.
It could only be a squash match. It was designed specifically to showcase this guy coming in.
I think they still let Dutt get in a lot in this match. Yes. Maybe even more than he needed to. Mm-hmm. I didn't think they had to take Joe even off his feet in this match. But
I think, you know, especially the audience that's watching this show, they want to see this guy have an actual match rather than just, you know, a quick 2 minute.
Yeah, I mean, this was great for what it was. Yeah. Tenay says that he's been watching tapes and DVDs of Joe. He's so excited he's here. He's dominated ROH, is the current pure champion, and he's only lost one match in the last 3 years.
Yeah.
Just instantly telling you, this is a big deal that this guy is here.
I loved it. I loved the fact that they didn't worry about bringing up another organization, especially, you know, Ring of Honor. That was sort of certainly its glory period, but didn't have the exposure that TNA did at the time or was about to have, and certainly didn't seem to pose any type of, you know, real threat. So there's no danger mentioning ROH, and it's just so logical. Why wouldn't you say something like that to make your own guy look good?
Joe comes out and is just hitting Dutt with leg kicks, and he can't get Joe off his feet, runs into a uranage. Then Joe does some of his trademark spots, the face wash, the Olay kick, which even some fans started singing. Tenay compares him to a UFC fighter rather than a pro wrestler.
It was sort of his gimmick.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, exactly. There was a rolling leg sweep and then a running senton by Joe. Joe then falls to the floor, takes a drop kick as Dutt comes off the apron, and then Dutt dives over the top to Joe on the floor. There's a springboard drop kick that takes Joe down in the ring, and Dutt hits a 450 splash for a two count. Then Dutt misses the Hindu press off the top. Joe with a power slam, an enziguri on the top rope, hits the muscle buster, locks on the coquina clutch, and gets the win at 626. And Tenay and West put over the debut big and announce he is 1-0 in TNA. Just a great debut, and you immediately watching this match, even at the time, you knew that Joe was coming in to be a real star. You could sense it here in this debut match, that Dutt understood his job here was to make Joe look like a killer.
Yeah, and like you said, you definitely have to congratulate the commentators for this match as well, because both guys sounded genuinely excited about seeing this man debut. Tenay, just great, hyping him up. Joe, just looking so impressive with his powerful offense. I think the reason why this guy was so popular, you know, around this era was because he was this big and strong guy who was always put in there with these lighter guys. And that's not to say you could put any big and strong guy in there with these lighter guys, because Joe stood out because he was a guy who had the cardio, the speed, and the finesse to keep up with this cruiserweight style. And I just thought he looked great. Sanjay did a great job making him look like a monster, and was able to get some offense in too. So, yeah, very good.
They plugged Bound for Glory for later that year, calling it their World Series. And then we got quite the promo from Raven, as we were hearing from all the different King of the Mountain participants. He says he would rather hug a suicide bomber than be his opponents tonight. I don't think that's true.
Okay, I don't know.
He says fate has opened its bosom and pulled him in and whispered sweet nothings about their future with bloody kissings of pain and joyous pain. Craters of destructive glory, they will ride a chariot of conviction and laugh at the deaths of his opponents. And the coroner's report would say they expired due to hatred, anger, and his sheer force of will. Because Raven is a human cancer, and the only way to kill the malignancy is to kill the host. And tonight he becomes the kingpin of the NWA and fulfills his destiny.
Wow, you typed out that whole thing.
This was poetry.
Yeah, wow.
This was a bullet point promo and he put this together in one take.
No way.
I'm saying if, I'm impressed.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, well, this
hell, if this was memorized, I'm impressed.
Totally.
This was a lot of shit to remember.
Absolutely. I thought this was a very good Raven-style promo, you know, dark and full of imagery. And watching it now, it almost feels like an earlier, you know, maybe more of a, maybe less well-delivered, but like certainly... had the same tone and feel of like a Bray Wyatt promo that we see today.
Yes, very much so. Bobby Roode and Lance Hoyt was up next. Lance Hoyt, now Lance Archer in New Japan Pro Wrestling. The crowd was very much into Hoyt, and they played up how the Orlando crowd had really adopted Lance Hoyt. He was always notorious for these stories where he'd go to the local bar, he'd always be buying shots for fans, drinking with them, and he ended up getting over as this kind of cult babyface in the Impact Zone as a result of it. D'Amore grabs the leg of Hoyt, and this allows Roode to knock him down on the floor, and D'Amore is attacking him. Tons of fans in the front row with self-made Hoyt t-shirts. Roode gets the advantage. He's wearing him down. Hoyt tosses him off the top and then hits a flapjack. There's punches on the turnbuckle, as with each punch they chant Hoyt. And then Hoyt hits the choke slam to Roode. Hoyt then goes to the top, but D'Amore stops him, and Roode hits a running powerbomb out of the corner. Hoyt kicks out, and then the referee stops Bobby Roode from using a hockey stick on him, allowing Hoyt to come back with a uranage to set up for a big boot, but D'Amore again grabs the foot from the floor. Hoyt gets distracted and takes a lariat from behind, allowing Bobby Roode to get the win at 7 minutes, 23 seconds. And Don West is disgusted at Scott D'Amore, this big load. And Tenet demands that Larry Zbyszko stop Team Canada. And Scott D'Amore then cuts a promo on Hoyt as Roode beats him down. Hoyt gets back to his feet. He teases choke-slamming D'Amore, but then Roode knocks him down again, continues to attack him. And then Scott D'Amore takes off his glasses, his watch, and his shirt.
Oh.
To which the crowd just grimaces at the sight of this man and his body. And Scott D'Amore climbs to the top and misses a moonsault. Hoyt fires up with a big boot to Bobby Roode, pulls down the back part of D'Amore's pants, exposing his ass, which Don West calls the worst moment in TNA history, which would not be true, and then chokeslams Scott D'Amore and hits him with a moonsault. And D'Amore is taken out on the stretcher, and this was the way they wrote off Scott D'Amore. As he was doing more of the booking, he would be brought back a couple months later into an on-camera role. But this was temporarily taking Scott D'Amore out as an on-air character.
You totally forget just how over Lance Hoyt was at one point in his TNA career. But this was certainly an example of that. And, you know, I thought D'Amore was a fantastic heel, and the way they kind of built up to that big moment at the end, revealing his ass and missing the moonsault with, and taking the shirt off, I thought it was a really good payoff. The crowd was just really caught for this whole thing.
Yeah. If there's one thing I had to nitpick, I don't think D'Amore needed to do the moonsault. That to me, more or less, just here's this guy that we present as this big fat blob, and he can do a moonsalt.
Yeah.
It's like anybody could do this.
He's a former wrestler.
Well,
yeah, but he didn't land.
That's not the gimmick, though, with Scott D'Amore. It's like he's this fat, out of shape manager with a big mouth. He's not portrayed as an ex wrestler.
He attempted a moonsault, didn't land it successfully.
He did the moonsault, though.
Yeah,
he
okay.
did the actual.
But he didn't.
To me, if you're watching that, it's like, well, anyone can do this.
But he didn't have the skill nor the timing to effectively land it.
He should have slipped then or something.
Okay, maybe. But I think it's impressive to just see a fat guy.
Hey, it's a great visual. I'm just saying, for the character.
Sure.
I don't think this guy should have a moonsault in his repertoire. So anyway, he's taken out on the stretcher. The number two moment was the suspended Jeff Hardy debuting in TNA in June of 2004. I guess the impact being that he showed up.
Sure, time. He's probably the biggest star even at that point.
Yep. Shane Douglas is with AJ Styles in the locker room. He had recently become a father and won the TNA title the prior month at Hard Justice and has to work harder, he says, as champion to keep the title than it was winning the title, and this is the biggest opportunity of his career. And tremendous wrestler, not quite the promo in 2005.
Yeah, especially at this point in his career. I think he's a lot way better now, but at this point, no. Not, certainly not main event level.
There's a video on America's Most Wanted, Chris Harris and James Storm. They are on a losing streak, but 3 Live Crew are having bigger problems. So this was a match determined which team is more dysfunctional right now, AMW or the team of Conan and BG James. Conan does his promo at the start, then BG does his regular deal, and the storyline is essentially AMW doesn't think they're as screwed up as 3 Live Crew are tonight. Conan, at this point, had incorporated this new move to his set where he would take his shoe off and whip it at his opponent. And this got over so big at the time, the shoe, throwing a shoe. And then fans would take their shoe off and hold it up.
Nobody would throw it, though.
This was the greatest, like, smoke and mirrors spot in a long time I had seen.
I thought it was great. How did it come about?
I think he probably just did it one time. And
Was it before or after somebody threw a shoe at Bush?
This was before. This was definitely before.
Oh,
Conan.
Okay. Well, maybe the guy who threw it at Bush was a TNA fan.
Could have been. Could have been a big fan of Conan. So he whips it at both Harris and Storm, and then they play up AMW being more aggressive than usual. There's a face buster by Conan delivered to James Storm. BG gets tagged in, walks into a super kick from Storm after attacking Harris, and then Storm hits a spinning inverted DDT out of the corner to James. James comes back with punches. Harris then runs the ropes and knocks Storm to the floor by mistake, and then the Outlaw shows up and starts fighting with Conan on the floor as AMW hits the heart attack on BG. Conan is distracted fighting with the Outlaw as they pin BG at 6:58, and the story here is Conan wasn't there for BG, and they argue after the match, and thankfully the announcers were telling this because I think the audience would be very confused at home of what was going on here, but I thought the announcers did a good job of explaining what this story is involving 3 Live Crew as the crowd chanted New Age Outlaws and BG refuses to bump fists with Conan. And then the Outlaw wants him to leave with him, and BG left on his own.
This whole thing played out just so much like a love triangle.
Yes.
You know? Come
the
with
woman
me.
Who says, I choose me.
Yeah. I love you. Come with me. Come back with me. I long for our days together.
The road dog.
Yeah. And it was just... To see like 40-year-old men portray this type of storyline, I thought was just a bit much.
The number one moment, TNA history. They showed Elix Skipper from the Turning Point 2004 match with AMW against Triple X scaling the top of the cage and hitting the Hurricanrana, which was still, to this day, an unbelievable spot.
The top five, I have to say, were pretty weak, okay? But I thought for the number one, they picked the best one. They definitely picked, at least up until this point, they probably picked a moment that is, to this day, is still a very recognizable TNA moment.
Yes.
Probably not number one right now, but I'd still say top five. this Hurricane Rana.
Yeah, this was just spectacular. How he didn't slip. They shot it perfectly. And you know what? They replayed this to death.
Yep.
And good for them. That's why people remember it. Because they hit you over the head with this when it happened and for years afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
So
like, think about all the Jeff Hardy dives, you know, like that he's done in TNA or any other thing that we never see anymore.
You don't remember half of the stuff where they've done other stuff where guys have dove off of cages, off of the entrance ramp.
The other moment I guess I remember, like in terms of dives, would be like, would it be like, was it AJ who did that? Remember that Ultimate X match where like AJ fall, like does that flip in midair and falls on his back?
Yeah. Yeah. They showed that in like the graphic package each time here, and yet that wasn't one of the moments.
I guess it's not so much a moment. You know, it's a bump, but.
Yeah, it was where they were doing the Ultimate X and AJ gets hit with like a chair or something, and then he does basically a somersault flip onto his back off the, as he's hanging onto the ropes to the mat. They show a video for the X Division three-way match where Tracy left Chris Sabin for Michael Shane, and now Trinity, not the Funkadactyl, the first Trinity, aligned herself with Chris Sabin.
She's wearing a similar outfit, though.
Yeah,
it's
they are.
White Trinity.
Yeah, no underwear, just Trinity.
Yep.
And Daniels, who went by the name Mr. TNA as his moniker at this time.
Mr. TNA?
Not accurate any longer. And so we had the three-way here with Christopher Daniels defending the X Division title. I believe this was when he was only Chris Daniels before he became Christopher. Defending against Chris Sabin and Michael Shane, Shawn Michaels' cousin.
Mm-hmm.
Who became pretty much just a forgotten wrestler all these years later.
He changed his name later.
Yeah, this was certainly one of the standout matches going into this show. We had the women in the corners. It's elimination rules, so they explain the differences here between that and the six-way opener. Daniels early on applies the Koji clutch to Chris Sabin, and Shane breaks it with an elbow off the top, and Tanay explains that Daniels was vulnerable here, and that's why he broke the submission. I'll take it, if you're going to at least give me a reason here for why you would break it up. Sabin is hanging off the apron by his feet, and Shane gets back body dropped onto Sabin, taking Sabin to the floor. Daniels does a split-legged moonsault to the floor onto Sabin and Shane, and then Daniels takes time out as Shane and Sabin just battle it out in the ring. Sabin goes for a pescado, ending in a gut buster by Daniels. Then there's a counter by Sabin, kicking off of Daniels to hit a tornado DDT to Michael Shane in the ring. He hits a big helo to Daniels on the floor. Lots of big spots here. There was the Otani springboard dropkick to the back of the head. And then Tracy trips Sabin, and then Trinity trips Shane, and this leads to the women getting into the ring for a chop exchange and a catfight spot, as Don West says that all women should be required to wrestle in outfits like that.
I wonder what
Don the Feminist West. Don the Femma West. No, that doesn't work.
No.
One of those worked in your head, not so much in execution. Sabin then, after this cat fight, hits the cradle shock to eliminate Michael Shane around the 10:55 mark.
Well, there's actually a bit more in that build-up there. This was almost like a little Tarantino moment right here, where you had Christopher Daniels, who basically puts Trinity in the pedigree position, about to hit the angel's wings. But at the same time, you had Sabin, who is Trinity's, business associate, who's about to deliver the cradle shock to Michael Shane. So instead of helping Trinity, Sabin decides to hit his move and go for the pin on his opponent. And this basically lets Christopher Daniels hit his move onto Trinity. And the announcers explain that it's only a business relationship between Sabin and Trinity. I thought it was like a nice little standoff, you know, that was reminiscent of like, you know, the ending to Reservoir Dogs.
Yeah, and Mike Tanay went nuts here as he watched this all unfold. He says, "Chris said it was just business. It's just business between the two." Mm-hmm. He lost it. He was really wanting to hit that home for everyone. Chris Sabin only cared about this goddamn title. Anyway, so it continues with Daniels and Sabin. Daniels hit a Death Valley driver to Sabin for a two count. Sabin then with a wrist clutch bridging German for a two as the crowd was chanting for both men. Running STO by Daniels, hits the best moonsault ever. And then Sabin DDTs him as he comes off the ropes, gets a two. Sabin goes for a springboard as Daniels kicks the ropes and drops him and hits the angel's wings. to keep the title at 17 minutes, 8 seconds. Really enjoyable three-way.
Yep, very fast paced with these two. You know, obviously another X Division style match, and very good. You know, very fast paced, very well executed moves. It almost seemed like, to me, like the X Division style, it was a lot more commonplace on this show, and not simply relegated to maybe one or two matches. You know, that we don't even really see that often now.
Shane Douglas is with the final member of the King of the Mountain match, the forgotten alpha male, Monty Brown, who a lot of people enjoyed in the early days of TNA.
I found him really obnoxious.
Oh, really? He had these crazy promos he cut.
I did not like him at all.
He says his associate Jeff Jarrett being arrested has no effect on him. It has nothing to do with him. Says the King of the Mountain features four Omega males, five if you count Abyss twice.
Okay.
And you will...
Wouldn't they be beta males?
Well, there's the Alpha and the Omega.
Omega would be at the end. And is that so that they're even lower?
Yeah, I think that's what he was trying to convey. You will feel the pounce, period. And he did it in his... the only way he could deliver it. A big emphasis on the pounce.
Well, he was unique. I'll give him that. But I just never... I don't know. I was just never a fan.
Do you remember his name when he came over to WWE?
Oh, man. No, you remind me.
Marquis Corvon.
Oh, Marcus.
It was Marcus, and then it went to Mark. M-A-R-Q-U-I-S.
Marquise.
Marquise. I think it was a silent S, if I recall. Marquis Corvon.
Wow, terrible.
Like, who comes up with a name like that?
Yeah.
That takes effort. Mike Tenay, then they show the video for the main event, and Mike Tenay apologizes.
Let me just read the Urban Dictionary definition of Omega male.
Okay.
The polar opposite of the alpha male. Omega males can have friends and close acquaintances, but prefer to accomplish things on their own without the help of a group. Omega males generally don't belong to any cliques and have no desire to be the leader or most outstanding out of said clique, whatever. Omega males have... relations with people from all groups and carry a resourcefulness and cunning, sometimes strength, to get a job done with their own skill. This being said, an Omega male can have great pride without it manifesting as ego. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah.
What was so bad?
You know, just part of the brick that makes the house.
Exactly. Well, it certainly sounds fine for a contestant in the King of the Mountain match.
We get the graphic, which Mike Tenay apologizes. It's outdated because they haven't updated it yet because Jeff Jarrett's picture is still in there.
No.
What kind of a turnaround is that, Way, to update a graphic?
I assume maybe they
had the render process be too long?
Maybe the guy wasn't working that day.
It probably means this was a last-minute call on Jarrett, you would think, right?
Yeah. But I thought it was odd. Yes, the graphic still had Jarrett there and not Raven, but... like, Sean Waltman wasn't even keyed on the thing.
Oh, really?
They didn't even have his name up.
Well, everyone knows who Sean Waltman is, right?
He doesn't need a name, sure.
All right, and that takes us to the King of the Mountain match. Now, this had been done in the past in TNA. This is a very confusing match, but I will say watching it, I was okay with it, but it's a tough match. If you could not describe this to somebody that's never watched one of these, and it makes sense.
Yeah, I think I've seen one before, but again, like every time I watch it, the rules are completely lost on me. And explain the rules, John.
I'm gonna try and do this as best I can. It's
it's a ladder match, a reverse ladder match.
It's a reverse ladder match. The only way, though, you can hang the title above the ring...
See, that in itself is already... it seems ridiculous to me.
It's the visual of you have to climb up, fasten the title, and then take it down because you've won it. Stupid.
It's dumb. Yeah, it's like the whole goal is to obtain the title, not hold the title temporarily just so you can hang it up, let go of it, and then take it back down. That's silly.
We haven't even discussed the penalty box aspect of this match.
Talk about
if you pin or submit someone, that person has to go into the penalty box for 2 minutes, and then you are eligible to hang the title. So you must pin someone or submit them in order to win the match. And Then you go, if you are pinned, you are put in the penalty box for 2 minutes.
I simply don't understand why they decided to do a reverse ladder match. You could have that exact same concept. Yeah, you put the fine. I'm fine with the penalty box. Fine with having needing a pinfall in order to be able to get the belt. But then just keep it a regular ladder match. You can only climb for the title if you've gotten a pin. What's so bad about that? Why
maybe,
a reverse
maybe
ladder?
There should be a rule that whenever you're describing a match to someone and you're like, well, it's a reverse, you stop them. Like, nope.
Yep.
No reverse matches, ever.
None.
How about a reverse match where if you somehow pin your opponent, you lose? So guy holds you down. Like if I were to pull you into my guard,
yeah.
I would beat you because my arms are down.
Well, how does somebody win? How does somebody win?
By getting pinned. So I'm saying if I pulled you into my guard, you'd be pinning me against your will.
Oh, I see. Okay. So
I would win the match because you pinned me.
The goal is to hold your opponent on top of you with your shoulders touching the mat.
Yeah. I swear to Christ.
That is so fucking...
If I pitched that in 2005 in TNA, I guarantee you it would have been done. 100% guaranteed.
It is so dumb that I'm sure...
it's the reverse match.
I'm sure it can happen.
The loser of the match and new TNA champion.
Yeah.
Oh boy, horrible idea. That's how horrible ideas get made.
Well, think
about a stupid idea. You laugh, and then suddenly we think it's good, and it happens on TV.
No,
this is the power some of these people have to do.
Well, think about the discussion for the reverse battle royal.
Oh Christ, man. I still can't explain that match.
That's shit. Wow, reverse match. We'll put that on our pay-per-view when we book it along with our last man laying match.
I know people that were in that match. It's like they really prided themselves on being great wrestlers, and that is a black mark knowing that they were the worst match of the year in the Observer Awards that year.
Oh, yeah.
Because of this fucking idea.
It's not their fault.
No, it wasn't, but unfortunately they'll always be linked that year to having the worst match of the year.
Yeah.
How have we never reviewed that? Was that an Impact or a pay-per-view? I can't even remember. That's just a goddamn blur period for me.
All right, so there's the penalty box, and the guy stays in there for 2 minutes.
And then he gets to come out.
A power play.
Yes.
John and I watched our only bit of hockey we've watched this entire year on Friday.
People listened on Monday.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You remember? Right. Never mind.
Yeah. It was great.
Yeah.
Love
hockey. I love sports.
AJ Styles was defending the title 1 month after winning it against Sean Waltman, Monty Brown, Abyss, and Raven. Larry Zbyszko is at ringside to present the title to... He holds it. So if you pin someone, you have to take the title from Zbyszko to hang it up, right? Pinfalls count anywhere in the building. Waltman is standing on the cage as they do the intros. Raven got a big reaction. And then Waltman dives off the cage to crossbody Raven, and this starts the match. Styles comes off a ladder with a Hurricane Rana to Abyss on the floor, and then Brown hits the pounce to Raven and pins him 25 seconds into the match, and then there's a big somersault dive by Styles to the floor onto Abyss. So at this point, Raven's in the penalty box. Styles then goes for a springboard, but his leg gets pulled from Abyss from behind to lose his balance, and there's a screw-up here in the time. And the first penalty, Raven comes out like with 15 seconds to go, and Tanay and Wes try to cover for this, that the watch might be off. Great start.
15 seconds, yeah.
Brown hit a power bomb to pin Waltman next.
They put, like, they made Monty Brown look very strong here, especially in the beginning, giving him pins over Waltman and Raven off the top. And I think that's one of the problems with some of these matches. Anytime, like, an Iron Man match and whatever, it is...
You trivialize falls.
Yeah, you make the guys lay down for pins a little too early. And it's, for me, it's hard to buy. And when I see these guys wrestle the same matches and, you know, maybe take up to a half an hour to get a pinfall. I think maybe if they made these guys get drunk or explain that they were on drugs beforehand, I'd buy it more. You know?
Sure.
Oh, they're dazed. They're drunk.
So they're on PCP.
Yeah.
It'd be a great idea.
Some drugs, though, I imagine would make you...
better?
Better, yeah. A better wrestler.
Like maybe speed?
Yeah.
As long as you don't hit a wall.
Wouldn't be able
wall.
To stay down.
Yeah. Could be even a placebo effect for some of these guys.
Sure.
Styles dives off the cage. Camera totally misses it. And then Brown hits the pounce to Styles. And then Raven pins Styles on the floor. So, Brown's just running through guys. Raven stops Abyss from hitting the shock treatment, attacks Abyss and Brown with a trash can. They show Styles and Waltman working together in the penalty box to strategize and work together. Waltman then has trouble feeding the trash can through the ropes. He has a hell of a time.
Yeah.
Can't get the trash can through.
This is the other match.
So he tosses it aside and opts to go for the garbage can that was already in the ring before he started this. And Don West notes, that's what a veteran does. Yes, Don, that's years on the road, thinking on the fly. Trash can can't get in the ring. Use the can that's already there.
Yeah.
Great thinking.
You could have also threw the can over the rope.
Well, that's what a veteran would have shied away from.
He's a few years away from that.
Yeah, he's not there yet.
Yeah.
Abyss hits a black hole slam to pin Monty Brown. Then Styles hits the Styles Clash to Raven, but Abyss breaks it up. Waltman beats Abyss with a chair on the floor, puts him on a table, and signals to Styles to come off the top. And Styles hits the spiral tap off the top, putting Abyss through a table on the floor. This looked incredible,
yeah,
and could have been screwed up so easily.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the distance he got doing this spiral tap,
yeah,
this guy's incredible.
Does he do that move anymore?
Very rare he busts it out, but he does do it. He has done it over the past year.
You know, he's at a point now where, like, he has so many moves that he doesn't necessarily need to pull out something that flashy to get a reaction. So that's cool.
And pins Abyss. Styles then climbs, but drops the title. Waltman hands it to him on the ladder and suggests that Waltman is going to help Styles win.
Okay, he drops it.
Yeah.
He climbs and then he drops
it. Yeah, he climbs the ladder and drops the title.
Yeah.
So Waltman hands it to him. Waltman then climbs up and attacks Styles and hits the X Factor, indicating he has double-crossed Styles.
Yeah. So, I mean, when he climbs the ladder with the belt and then he drops the belt. I thought that was just a screw-up, but I suppose that was all done to build up to this turn.
Raven then brings a staple gun in. He uses it on Waltman's head, and then Waltman comes back using it on Raven's groin, which prompts the call of the show by Don West.
Oh, look at this! Oh, that's where you get him! The vasectomy right there! He just performed a vasectomy right in the middle of the ring!
Love Don West. Tanay is getting confused here on who has scored pinfalls. Count us at home as well with that. Abyss then tips the ladder, sending Waltman and Styles to the floor through a table. Monty Brown then pounces Abyss off the ladder, and then Raven comes in and hits the even flow DDT to Brown, and Raven climbs up, kicks Abyss off the ladder, and Raven takes the title at 14:22, and the crowd is chanting for Raven after the match, and you got the heavy sell by Tanay about looking back at the history of pro wrestling and what an incredible event this was. This will be right up there with the greatest pro wrestling shows ever. Ever, ever, ever.
Maybe in TNA's history.
Yeah, perhaps. This was a good show, but yeah, TNA had a lot of good shows during this time period.
Well, just talking about this match itself, I'm still not really a big fan of the rules. I don't feel like any of the added rule sets really added much to create more drama than a typical ladder match. I don't think the penalty box really does anything. It makes for more pinfalls, which aren't that believable anyway. But overall, I thought this was still a good match. You know, I thought these guys did a very good job. A lot of big, spectacular spots.
They worked with a very complicated gimmick, and yeah, I thought came through.
Yeah, you know, and overall, I thought strong show, top to bottom, except a lot of that Three Live Crew stuff, which I thought was kind of lame. But you know, really great X Division stuff. Joe's debut was great. Main event, you know, still done well despite difficult to understand rules. So above all, I thought, a wonderful crowd and very good commentary too. So totally a. Oh, I'd give this maybe 8 out of 10.
Yeah, that's actually exactly what I had this show at. A fun show to go back and watch. Some very good wrestling throughout this. Obviously much more good than bad on this show. And a time where you really did feel there was this kind of youth movement within TNA. They mixed it with other stars that had some names attached to them. And I think they went too far in that direction, worried that we have these great wrestlers, but no one knows who they are, and relied too much on names from the past without having enough faith in their own ability to create guys. And you go back to this time period where I mean, these shows were more successful business-wise than when you brought in all of these bigger name stars.
Man,
this was a product that it wasn't doing gangbuster numbers, but it was doing appreciably more than what they would be doing years later when they had this huge budget for talent.
And then once you got into the Hogan-Bischoff era, where basically the whole mandate seemed to be more, you know, take the famous guys and
right.
take the less famous guys, but the guys who can work and kind of shove them off to the side. And we're kind of presented to the point we are right now with TNA, where the X Division is almost just a very small afterthought on the whole show.
So, as we mentioned, very little feedback here. I will go through our one comment here from our man Payne. This, to me, was the peak of the company. The next month had epic brawls with Abyss, the use of Sabu and Rhino in the main event picture, before the sudden and random Jeff Jarrett winning the title back off of TV. Can you go into any detail on that, seeing as it was a show in Canada? Yeah, they did the title switch, taking the title off Raven back to Jarrett in Windsor, and the idea was they wanted the title on a strong heel when they started on Spike, and that meant Jeff Jarrett. So that was kind of the thinking. It was right before they launched on Spike, and they wanted the title on Jarrett for that relaunch.
So then why do the... Oh, okay. So Jarrett was always supposed to win, you think?
Yeah, and I think that they wanted to hold it off till right when they went back to Spike and kind of build it around babyfaces going after Jarrett.
Okay.
From memory alone, Samojo's impactful debut was pretty cool, and even having Tanay talk about his ROH run was refreshing for the time. Who the hell is Shocker? And hey, Zachary Gowen and Delirious on this show. What was the deal with the Naturals? All I remember from them is their run with Shane Douglas. I also enjoyed Lance Hoyt when he was in TNA, especially his early run as Dallas with Kid Cash. You know, I was incredibly disappointed when MVP's opponent for Eric Young was himself, as I hoped he was bringing back King of the Mountain for this year's event. Though we're getting a six-man ladder match, it just won't be the same. Great show, mainly for the main event, as I love seeing Raven and other ECW guys getting a real shot at the main event. 7.5 Raven dog collars out of 10. So, a fun TNA show to go back and watch. And if you want to, as we mentioned, you can watch every TNA pay-per-view on their on-demand site, whatever it is.
It's YouTube. Just go. Just basically YouTube search.
TNA Wrestling Plus is the channel.
Yeah, just type in Slammiversary 2005 and look for the largest length file, and you'll be presented with an option to provide $2 to the company to view it.
There you go. All right, so that's going to wrap up Review Away for this week. Way, you've been scrolling through the catalog, and I understand you have an update on your WWE Network. You're willing to go back into the deep end?
I am.
Digital streaming?
I am. Hopefully I've solved a lot of my issues with the network, and I think it's been working.
Okay.
So, next week, we are going to look not quite at a King of the Mountain match, but another ladder match. Money in the Bank. And our...
A normal ladder match.
Yeah, I'd say about as normal as you can get. A six-man ladder match. We are going to look back at the first Money in the Bank pay-per-view. And that would be from the year...
2010. This was the first time they had a pay-per-view dedicated to the match with two Money in the Bank ladder matches. So we are going to review that. This is the year before the Punk one, so let us not confuse.
So don't get your hopes too high.
Well, I feel going back and I feel like the Punk one, it didn't happen that long ago.
Yeah,
I feel
me too.
Weird going back to review it. Yeah, I feel like
everybody still remembers it, you know, and I still think it's a bit too fresh. So
yes.
we'll wait a year.
Yeah, another year at least. So 2010's Money in the Bank will be our review for next week. So you can go watch the show on the network, leave some feedback. We love getting feedback. And in the meantime, give Way a follow.
Oh, in the meantime, you should cut a promo, a 30-second promo.
Yes, we have had a few submissions already. Why don't you quickly tell us, Wade, the rules of said contest, which is going to culminate next Monday on a Review of Raw, where we are going to play all of the promos and select a winner who will be walking away with a beautiful Review Away t-shirt.
Yes, that's right. We announced this last week on Review and Impact, but basically we were asking all of our listeners to record themselves delivering a 30-second pro wrestling promo in a build-up to a match between yourselves or a character of your design and an opponent of your choice. This could be anybody. It could be myself. It could be John Pollock. It could be Nate Milton, who was called out on a recent promo.
Ooh.
Or it could be anybody. Anybody you want. The only conditions that we are asking for you is to please keep this to 30 seconds, which everybody has already blatantly not followed. But... Whatever.
Hey, if you have a great promo,
you know what?
We'll listen. We're all about selling tickets to this event. It's, so 30 it's really good.
It's a 30-second limit, give or take 1 or 2 minutes, okay? So try to keep it to 30 seconds. Please address if you want. You don't have to do this. You can, again, you promos come in all shapes and sizes. But if you need this information, you got to build up to the match taking place on Monday, June 23rd at the Review Arena in Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
Review Arena.
Yes. And just upload your video to any streaming site of your choice, most popular being YouTube. I wonder, can people use Facebook to upload?
I think you could. Can you embed a Facebook video outside?
Whatever you choose.
Also, don't make it a private video.
Don't make a private video. Maybe a Dropbox might work too. I don't know. I'm not an expert, okay? Despite
YouTube's pretty basic.
YouTube, yeah. Just sign up for a YouTube account. Do it. Post it on the thread at lawradio.proboards.com, and we'll be announcing a winner on Monday.
Yes, Monday night we'll have the winner for you. So go up to liveaudiowrestling.com and find out all the information for the promo contest at lawradio.proboards.com. It's free to sign up for the message board, and we'll chat with you next week. We have a song to finish things off with. Is there anything coming to mind? No, there is not. Mm-hmm. So let's go out. In honor of the main event we just reviewed, we'll go with Mountain Song by Jane's Addiction.
Oh, wow.
What a great decision to end the show with. We hope you enjoyed Slammiversary. We'll chat with you next week.
I don't know that one.
I just looked up Mountain.